Asavatsantarayam brihi pitravadinavatsalaha ratravatsadrase snikto gurushvishvarabhu bhavanaha vidyartha rupa janmadhyo manastamba vivarjitaha. Okay, so he repeats. Brahmanyaha. Cultured as a good Brahmana. Shila Sampanaha. Possessing all good qualities. Asacha Sandaha. Determined to understand the absolute truth. Jitta Indriyaha. Fully controlling the senses and mind. Atmavat. Like the super soul. Sarvabhutanam. Of all living entities. Eka Priya. The one beloved. Surittamaha. The best friend. Adasavat. Like a menial servant. Sannata. Always obedient. Aryangrihi. At the lotus feet of great persons. Pitravat. Exactly like a father. Dinavatsalaha. Kind to the poor. Vatrivat. Exactly like a brother. Sadrashe. To his equals. Snigdaha. Very affectionate. Gurushu. Unto the spiritual master. Ishvara Bhavanaha, who considered exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vidya, education. Artha, riches. Rupa, beauty. Janma, aristocracy or nobility. Adyaha, endowed with. Mana, pride. Stamba, impudence. Vivarjitaha, completely free from. Translation. The qualities of Maharaj Prahlada, the son of Hiranyakashipu, are described herewith. He was completely cultured as a qualified Brahmana, having very good character and being determined to understand the absolute truth. He had full control of his senses and mind. Like the super soul, he was kind to every living entity and was the best friend of everyone. To respectable persons, he acted exactly like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother, and he considered his teachers, spiritual masters, and older godbrothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on. You can repeat. The qualities of Maharaja Prahlada, the son of Hiranyakashipu, are described herewith. He was completely cultured as a qualified Brahmana, having very good character and being determined to understand the absolute truth. He had full control of his senses and mind, like the super soul. He was kind to every living entity and was the best friend of everyone. To respectable persons, he acted exactly like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother. And he considered his teachers spiritual masters and older godbrothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. These are some of the qualifications of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is automatically a Brahmana because a Vaishnava has all the good qualities of a Brahmana. Shamal damas tapaksho chan shantirajamamevacha janam vijanam astikyam brahma karma subhavacham. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness. These are the qualities by which the Brahmanas work. It's from the Gita, 18th chapter, text 42. These qualities are manifest in the body of a Vaishnava. Therefore, a perfect Vaishnava is also a perfect Brahmana, as indicated here by the words, Brahmanya Shila Sampanaha. A Vaishnava is always determined to understand the Absolute Truth. And to understand the Absolute Truth, one needs to have full control over his senses and mind. Prahlad Maharaj possessed all these qualities. A Vaishnava is always a well-wisher to everyone. The six Goswamis, for example, are described in this way, Dhira, Dhira, Jana, Priya. They were popular with both the gentle and the ruffians. A Vaishnava must be equal to everyone, regardless of one's position. So Atmavat, a Vaishnava should be like Paramatma, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Pradeshi Arjuna Tishtati. Paramatma does not hate anyone. Indeed, he is in the heart of a Brahmana, but he is also even in the heart of a pig. As the moon never refuses to distribute its pleasing rays even to the home of a chandala, a Vaishnava never refuses to act for everyone's welfare. Therefore, a Vaishnava is always obedient to the spiritual master, Arya. The word Arya refers to one who is advanced in knowledge. One who is deficient in knowledge cannot be called Arya. At the present, however, the word Arya is used to refer to those who are godless. This is the unfortunate situation of Kali Yuga. The word guru refers to the spiritual master who initiates his disciple into advancement in the science of Krishna or Krishna consciousness, as stated by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Shri Bhagavan mantro padeshake gurav itya artaha. So, Om Magana, Sumadanda Shah, Gananjana, Shalakaya, Chakshurun, Meditam, Yena, Tasmai, Sri Gurave Namaha. So, according to Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavad Gita, the word Aryan, which means someone who is an Arya, refers to one who knows the higher values of life. And it's interesting, Prabhupada, here in the purport, mentions, I'm just going to talk about this at first, He says nowadays the word Arya is used to refer to those who are godless. So let's make some reference to that. Of course, there's two references that I can think of. One, of course, is during World War II, you had Mr. Hitler talking about the Aryans. And he thought the Aryans meant something genetic. That means blonde hair, blue eyes, which he wasn't, actually. And someone who, the master race, so to speak. And he was very much interested in genetic engineering, like people are now. Because now it's very popular. You have this genetically engineered food. It's called GMO food. So he wanted to have GMO persons, genetically modified persons, or genetically cures of persons, and he called them Aryans. But Aryan doesn't refer to a specific race, it doesn't refer to a specific sex, male or female, it doesn't refer to a specific country, it doesn't refer to a specific birth. Aryan refers simply to one who knows Krishna, who knows the higher value. You know, what is the value of life? And of course the verse in the Bhagavatam, Nate Vidhu Swartha Gatim Hi Vishnu. Those who don't know the values of life, Swartha Gatim. Gatim, of course, means the goal, or Gati means goal. So Nate Vidhu, those who don't know the goal, Nate Vidhu Swartha Gatim, the artha, the value. Just like sometimes the word artha is meant to indicate money and sometimes it indicates value. Swartha Gatim Hi Vishnu. The Rasaya Yebahir Artha Manina, they're all on the mental platform. They're Bahir, they're outside of Krishna consciousness. Bahir means outside. Anda Yatanda Rupaniyamanas, Te Pishatantram Urudamni Vada. They're blind, and unfortunately, they're leading other blind people. And of course, when blind people lead other blind people, they both fall into a ditch. So this is the present situation. So anyway, so that was one reference that Prabhupada is indicating as far as Aryans. Another reference I think that would be more direct as far as Prabhupada's indication here is groups such as the Arya Samaj. There's actually two groups. One is called the Brahmo Samaj, and then there's the Arya Samaj. And anyway, one of their acharyas is Dayananda Saraswati. They're very, very popular in India and also in the United States. They're called Arya Samajis. That means the people who are members of the Arya Samaj. So this Arya Samaj, what they believe in basically is Vedic rituals. You know, Vedic rituals coming from the original four Vedas, particularly the Rig Veda and the Yajur Veda. And they don't believe in the itihasas, the histories, or the Puranas. They think that these particular literatures are not Vedic. Although in the original Vedas, in the Rig Veda, it's stated itihasa Purananam Panchamo Veda Uchute. Which is an interesting statement, that itihasa, the histories in the Puranas, itihasa Puranam of the Puranas, Panchama Veda Uchite, they are known as the fifth Veda. So even in the original Vedas, it talks about the fifth Veda, which is the books like the Srimad Bhagavatam and Ramayana and Mahabharata. Ramayana and Mahabharata are itihasas, or histories. Of course, let's be very careful about which Puranas we accept, because the Puranas, although originally they're all bona fide, many of them are not coming into cyclic succession and have been severely altered. Or, in the words of Shripad Bhattacharya, corrupted. I mean, that's a very heavy statement, corrupt. Like we say someone's corrupt, it doesn't mean that they're illicit. You know, you say someone's corrupt, it generally means there's a thief or they're doing some illicit activity. It just means they've been changed. So you, in many cases, they're unrecognizable. And just like Yesterday I got a letter from one disciple who was quoting from one of the Puranas, not the Bhagavad Purana, which is a bona fide Purana. And she was writing me, she said, I can't understand Krishna because... anyway, she gave this crazy story about Samba, where Samba had a relationship with... Samba's, of course, Krishna's son, with Jambavati. He had a relationship with one of Krishna's wives, and Krishna cursed him. You know, so people come up with all these crazy things. You know, ISKCON has become a little bit too... Or the memory, many of the members of ISKCON have become too intelligent for their own good. That, what do they say, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. So they're picking up all these, you know, these stories from Hinduism today. You know, Hindu stories. And they're getting very confused. And of course it is very confusing because when you don't receive something from disciplic succession, then it really doesn't have any potency, first of all. And second of all, it can be completely changed. And that's what the Arya Samajis, referring back to the Arya here, the Arya Samajis don't understand, that the Vedic literatures have to be presented according to disciplic succession to properly understand, as Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 15, Vedashtasa Veda Hameva Vedya, by all the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. That's the purpose, the telios of all the Vedic literatures. Otherwise, it's difficult to understand the Vedic literatures at all. I mean, one may think it's Vedic literatures are hinting at sense gratification, as Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nish Trigunya Vivarjana. Then he says the Veda is mainly dealing with the three modes of material nature. So one will not be able to understand. So these Aryas, or the Arya Samajis, sorry, not the Aryas, the Arya Samajis, they don't believe, you know, basically in the personality of God. They just believe in rituals and sacrifice, and they certainly don't believe in the deities. You know, for them, the deities are just like, really. So I have one disciple, or I had one disciple, in New Zealand, who's now living in Australia. And she was a very good devotee, but then she happened to marry one of these Arya Samajis. You know, that probably one of the ways we lose lady disciples the most is them getting married to the wrong person. And actually in India, well, with Indian families, it's not that you simply marry the wrong person, you marry the wrong family. Yeah. You know, it's one thing, I get this all the time, I mean, from lady disciples or female disciples, they marry someone, and, you know, they're able to deal with the husband, which is, it's pretty easy, dealing with the husband. So they're able to deal with the husband, but the husband's mother and father, and then the little aunties come along. And ants don't mean the things that crawl on the ground. They come along and just like, ooh, they get overwhelmed. So anyway, so she was forced to cut off all of her connection with me. I mean, not only was she forced not to worship the deities or not to worship Krishna or not to chant Hare Krishna, but she's not allowed to talk to me simply because I believe that there's a God. You know, it's a simple thing. You know, I believe there's a God. And of course, one of his names is Krishna, and he's very attractive, and he had his pastimes. 5,000 years ago, the pastimes are still going on somewhere else, simply because of that. And they are vegetarians, too. Of course, Prabhupada did say that we shouldn't be too much preaching about vegetarianism, because he said even the monkeys, many of the monkeys, not all the monkeys, many of the monkeys are vegetarians, too. So there's vegetarian demons, too. Which is interesting. And there's meat-eating devotees. It's like the story of... I mean, one has to really look behind the external activities sometimes in dealing with people. Just like the story of Shivas Thakur had a tailor, and his tailor was a meat-eater. But because he had devotion for Shivas Thakur and was, I guess, making nice dhotis, or whatever they wore during those days, it was dhotis. So he's making nice dhotis, The Srivastakur just very devoted to him. Lord Chaitanya gave him pure devotional service. So many times we have to look beyond the externals and actually see what's happening in someone's heart, because someone, because of a particular situation, I mean, even there's many great devotees like Garuda who eat meat. Garuda's allowed to eat any type of meat except for Brahmins. That's why devotees should really want to become Brahmins so they don't become food for Garuda. You know, hey, here's my Brahmin thread, Garuda. Okay, I won't eat you. You know, there's a story. There's a story in the Mahabharata that Garuda ate a whole village one time, and by accident, he swallowed a Brahmin because this Brahmin had married one of the ladies in the village. You know, one of the Chandala ladies, and Garuda felt like choking in his throat, and finally he had to throw up the Brahmin and allow the Brahmin to get out with his wife. So anyway, you have devotees like that. You know, so of course we follow four regulating principles. That doesn't excuse us and say, well, if Garuda can eat meat, I can eat meat too. Because the principle is that we follow the order of the spiritual master. Like that. So that's very, very important. So that's the art, little bit of what Prabhupada was referring to as Arya there. You know, Aryans or Arya Samaj, like that. These people use these words, or even they use the, of course, Hitler even used the swastika. Swastika means good fortune. So he turned it around and used the swastika as a symbol of the Nazi regime. So people misuse all the, or yoga. You know, you see, a lot of the things that we're teaching, people have actually taken these words and basically they're misusing the word or doing activities which the word never referred to, or activities that are just like partial manifestations of what the word refers to. Like the word yoga, for example, there's no indication of the word yoga of anything physical. The word yoga has no connection with anything, I mean, at least the direct translation. Of course, yoga basically means to connect yourself. It comes from yuj, which means connection. And you're connecting yourself with Krishna. So part of the process originally, of course, were the different exercises by which you would control your senses, like it's mentioned here in the purport, that a devotee has to control his senses, sama. You know, like we're talking about the qualities of Brahman that are mentioned in the purport. You know, sama, dhamma, tapak, shocham. He has to be equipoised. So one of the reasons for all those exercises was to control your senses. I was just talking to someone who went to one yoga retreat, and they had a 3-day Mona Vrata as yoga retreat. And it actually helped them control their senses. It didn't focus them on Krishna, but at least they realized they didn't have to talk so much. But then afterwards they got back into their old habits because they didn't have a higher purpose. I mean, it's one thing to learn that you don't have to talk so much, or to go to some retreat where you, Ayurvedic retreat where you learn you don't have to eat so much, but then you get back in because you have uncontrolled senses. You actually get back to the same thing again. So anyway, so even the word yoga is not really used properly nowadays, or meditation. I remember when I was young, before I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we thought meditation meant to make the mind void. So I was trying my best, you know, to make the mind devoid of everything. And when I accomplished it, I was very happy. Of course, that's a contradiction. I was thinking, honey bo, I made my mind void. But oh, I'm rejoicing. My mind's not void anymore. So you can't. Of course, the Mayavadis, generally, their mind is devoid of common sense. So, no, obviously you can't make the mind. So meditation means you meditate on an object. And spiritual meditation means you meditate on a spiritual object. Of course, you can meditate on a material object, too. Just like another type of meditation I did before I joined the movement was I meditated on the candle. I don't know if anyone's done that. We candle. You just keep staring at a candle, and you know, I experienced ecstasy. No, I didn't. I thought I had achieved perfection. meditating on a candle. So that is a type of meditation, but actual meditation is meditate on a spiritual object. Because what's the use of meditating on a material object? What's the use of making your mind void or vacant? So a spiritual object is Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, you know, things related with Krishna, the spiritual master, the service of Krishna, the instructions of Krishna, the philosophy of Krishna, conscious of the holy names. I mean, these are all different objects of meditation. So anyway, so Prabhupada here is making reference to how a word is used improperly. That's the first point. I think the most important point here, obviously, in this particular verse, is that, as described in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that yas yasti bhakti bhagavacha kinchana savaragunas tatra samasate sura harabha bhaktasya kato mahatmana mano retainasati davato bahi. And actually, I pulled out the fifth canto, so I can talk about this verse. And this is a very wonderful verse. Canto, chapter 18, text 12. And this is the residence of Jambadweep, awful prayers. And I already recited the Sanskrit. And Prabhupada translates this verse as, all the demigods and their exalted qualities, such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation, become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Personality of God, or thus it. On the other hand, a person devoid of devotional service and engaged in material activities, and this is a heavy statement, an absolute statement. Absolute statement means like all or none, has no good qualities. That's a pretty heavy statement. It means none. Ningún, as they say in Spanish. Ningún cualidades. That's pretty interesting. Even if he's adept at the practice of mystic yoga or the honest endeavor of maintaining his family and relatives, he must be driven by his own mental speculations and must engage in the service of the Lord's external energy. How can there be any good qualities in such a man? Wow. I mean, of course, if we speak about this publicly, it'll make us very much politically incorrect. It's someone who... anyway, let's take the first part of this verse. So Prabhupada in his purport here talks about what's considered to be the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava. I'm going to start this discussion, maybe tomorrow we'll continue with the same verse because it's a very important discussion. Of course, there's not only 26. I mean, if you find something that's not listed in this 26 list, then there's other qualities too, but these are the 26 primary qualities. I mean, just like you find 64 qualities of Krishna. I mean, I could find more than 64. You're not limited by 64. But these are the 64 primary that the Acharyas talk about. Number one is actually what's mentioned here in this verse, and I'll speak about that. He is very kind to everyone. Everyone is also an absolute statement. It doesn't mean someone, most people, or almost all people. That means everyone he's very kind to. So what does it mean to be kind? First of all, let's take the word kind. Kind means you actually work for someone's welfare. You know, first of all, you find out before you can attempt to be kind, you have to find out what kind means. You know, you can, what do you say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So you can be very kind to someone, just like sometimes you go to a doctor, and very common, they misdiagnose you. I was just reading about someone who had cataract surgery. I don't know if you've heard of cataract surgery. It means when you get older, your eyes tend to get clouded. And the doctors botched. Botched? Everyone understand what a botched means? They blew it. Made a mistake. You know, common English. They botched the operation and his whole cornea is a scar like that. So I'm sure the doctor was very kind, thinking he was doing the right thing, but you know, just like incompetent or something like that. So unless you have knowledge of Swardhigatim, what is the goal? You can't really be kind to someone. Just like if I may give charity, let's say I'm very kind, when I was young, for example, a bum came up to me, sorry, I don't want to offend anybody, but someone who was challenged economically came up to me. Someone who was challenged in cleanliness. And I don't want to say bad breath, but his breath smelled like liquor. He came up to me and he begged for some money, and I gave him money, thinking this was kindness. But what was he going to do with the money? And of course, I only gave him like 25 cents. Because of my own cheapness. So what was he going to do with the money? He was going to buy more liquor. So I thought I was being kind, but actually I was engaging in more in sinful activity. Or let's take the case of abortion, for example. You know, we think, you know, not we, but let's say a doctor may think he's being kind to a lady because she has an unwanted child. The child's going to cause so much distress and she's going to spend so many years raising the child or whatever. And he kills the child. He's thinking, well, kind to the lady, isn't it? So there's so many instances. I mean, that's a very extreme instance where someone is thinking they're being kind, but actually they're sending the person to hell. You feed someone, or this charity, mundane charity, food distribution, even vegetarian food distribution. If it's not offered to Krishna, you're just feeding them sin. So in the name of kindness, you're actually involving people more in the material energy. So in order to be kind, you got to do research first and find out what is the goal of life. In other words, only Vaishnava can be kind. You know, like my mother, she's very kind in a material sense, and not really kind, because she doesn't understand what's good for people. She gives charity to people, sometimes money to people, but it's not really intelligent. Okay, so we have to find out what the goal of life is. Then we can be kind, and that's why a non-Vaishnava is never kind, because what they're giving or how they're helping or their compassion is simply engaging someone more in Krishna's material energy. So, anyway. And also, the second part of this is kind to everyone. So you can be kind to everyone only when you love everybody. You have to like people before you can be kind. So in other words, what I'm doing is analyzing each of these Vaishnava qualities. First of all, you have to understand what kindness means. And second of all, you have to like people. How can you be kind to someone you hate? Because kindness means not only doing the right thing, but doing it with the right mood or motive. Two things are required. And how do you love everybody? How do you get to the point of liking everybody? I mean, that's a hard one. You have to have your senses under control, because otherwise you're going to be thinking of friends and enemies. You know, if I think of different people, like, you know, I look at Christian prayer, oh, she's very nice. I'll be kind to her because she served the deities and helped me so many years. But here's this other person who's never done a damn thing for me. I don't know, why should I be kind to you? You know, he just agitates me. You know, just some hypothetical person, not mentioning anything. So you really have to be free of selfishness. You know, what person, you can't really think of how a person, what he does for me, how he affects me, how he pleases me, how he displeases me. You have to have complete control of your senses to be kind. Anyway, so we'll continue with our analysis of the 26 qualities of Vaishnava. It's actually a very important part of this, particularly part of the Bhagavatam, because you're talking about how Vaishnavas have all good qualities and non-devotees don't have any good qualities. All glories to Śrīla Prabhupāda.